Welcome to episode 415 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. I'm Peter Anderson. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Today is day 20 of our series, 100 Days in the New Testament. And today we turn again to the most famous of Jesus' sermons recorded by the Apostle Matthew in Matthew 5, verse 7. Jesus said it loud and clear in the Sermon on the Mount and on several other occasions. All God's rules for human living are summed up in the direction to love God and love our neighbor. Everything else springs from this work. To be a Christian in the way of Jesus, we will in fact have to swim upstream in today's American culture. Share what you have with anybody who needs it. Love your enemies. Live generous lives. Tell the truth. Act toward each other the way God acts toward you. Sacrifice something big for something good. Many who claim to be Christians do not seem to understand or accept the demands of our faith, as reflected in this sermon. Oswald Chambers, early 20th century Scottish Baptist evangelist and teacher, challenges us. The teaching of the Sermon on the Mount is not do your duty, but do what is not your duty. It is not your duty to go the second mile, to turn the other cheek. But Jesus says, if we are his disciples, we shall always do these things. There will be no spirit of, oh well, I cannot do any more. I've been so misrepresented and misunderstood. Never look for right in the other man, but never cease to be right yourself. We are always looking for justice. The teaching of the Sermon on the Mount is, never look for justice, but never cease to live it. Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., American jurist and legal scholar who served as an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States for 30 years, lamented, most people are willing to take the Sermon on the Mount as a flag to sail under, but few will use it as a rudder by which to steer. Omar Nelson Bradley, a senior officer of the United States Army during and after World War II, rising to the rank of General of the Army, and who was the first chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, observed that ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants. We know more about war than we know about peace, more about killing than we know about living. We have grasped the mystery of the atom and rejected the Sermon on the Mount. Philip Yancey, best-selling Christian author, points out that thunderously, inarguably, the Sermon on the Mount proves that before God, we all stand on level ground. Murderers and temper throwers, adulterers and lusters, thieves and coveters. We are all desperate, and that is in fact the only state appropriate to a human being who wants to know God. Having fallen from the absolute ideal, we have nowhere to land but in the safety net of absolute grace. Harry Truman, 33rd President of the United States, once said, I doubt if there is any problem in the world today, social, political, or economic, that would not find a happy solution if approached in the spirit of the Sermon on the Mount. David Martin Lloyd-Jones, Welsh Protestant minister and medical doctor who was influential in the Calvinist wing of the British evangelical movement in the 20th century, notes that the Sermon on the Mount, if I may use such a comparison, is like a great musical composition, a symphony, if you like. Now the whole is greater than a collection of the parts, and we must never lose sight of the wholeness. I do not hesitate to say that unless we have understood and grasped the Sermon on the Mount as a whole, we cannot understand properly any one of its particular injunctions. N.T. Wright, English New Testament scholar, Pauline theologian, and Anglican bishop, suggests that Jesus himself, as the gospel story goes on to its dramatic conclusion, lives out the message of the Sermon on the Mount. He is the light of the world. He is the salt of the earth. He loves his enemies and gives his life for them. He is lifted up on a hill so that the world can see. John Quincy Adams, 6th President of the United States, declared, "The Sermon on the Mount commands me to lay up for myself treasures not upon earth, but in heaven. My hopes of a future life are all founded upon the gospel of Christ." At the close of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew records the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. The Greek word, translated astonished, carries the meaning of being filled with amazement to the point of being overwhelmed. While we ourselves may be astonished, even overwhelmed at commands to become perfect and not to judge or become angry, the listeners of Galilee had other reasons to be astonished that might escape us. First of all, Jesus of Nazareth, the consummate teacher and theologian, did not have the credentials of a teacher according to the customs of his time. Matthew O. Richardson, scholar and educational administrator, wrote an article in 2002 entitled "Jesus the Unorthodox Teacher." In it, he writes, "Those recognized and entitled teachers were typically individuals who taught in the formal educational system. Such instructors taught at either the Bet HaSefer, House of the Book, Bet Talmud, House of Learning, Bet HaKnesset, House of Assembly or Synagogue, or Bet Midrash, House of Study. It was at the Bet Midrash that exceptional students became teachers and were awarded the rank and title of rabbi. Jesus, as far as we can determine, was never a student or a teacher at Bet Midrash. Secondly, not only did Jesus not teach with the authority of the teachers of the day, he did not teach like the teachers of the day. The New Testament world was one that embraced the adage, older is better, oldest is best. The more ancient someone or something was, the more credibility it had. Thus, it is common to find in rabbinic texts, Rabbi X said in the name of Rabbi Y, who had it as a tradition from Rabbi Z. This was an authoritative way of substantiating a statement. However, Christ did not cite previous rabbis. Moreover, he did not speak as prophets who often said, "Thus saith the Lord." With bold audacity, he declared, "I say unto you," asserting his word to be the final authority and holding precedence over the law, over its commonly held interpretation, and over the customs of the day. Finally, what gave people authority to act in public was their honor rating. Lower-born people, like the son of a carpenter, were not expected to lead in public, to perform miracles, or preach with great wisdom. Yet Christ preached with power, boldness, and unsurpassed wisdom. No wonder the masses were astonished. Jesus Christ, the son of a carpenter, spoke as though he were the son of a king. But we know Jesus was no mere man. He was no mere teacher. He was no mere leader of a movement. He spoke with authority because all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to him. He spoke with authority because since before the beginning of time, he spoke and it was done. He commanded and it stood fast. He spoke with authority because all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Father, thank you for Jesus, the one with authority, not only to teach, but to change all of our lives. Help us to submit ourselves to that authority now and for always. That's our episode. Remember that God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full today.